Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to Jokes with Mark Simmons, the podcast where I chat to another comedian about jokes they can't get to work. As always, I'm joined by, it's called Producer Joel.
Hey, Mark.
Hey, Joel. How's it going, mate?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm like, normally it sort of takes a few text exchanges to sort of organise the time because you're such a busy man. First, I said, could you do this morning? You went, yeah?
Yeah.
I went 11. You went, yeah?
Yeah. Well, I'm just at home. It's one of the, like, today's one of those days where I'm just at home, like, doing a bit of editing and stuff. So I can, you know, I can just jump off that and talk to my old pal Mark anytime.
Oh, that's nice. And you invited me to your birthday party the other day.
I did.
Yeah.
You're not coming.
I couldn't come, no. But no. That's just the life of a comedian.
I sort of knew that as well.
So you you edged your bets before you'd you asked. Yeah.
If I turned to my girlfriend and said, he won't say yes, don't worry. There's no way he's going to say yes.
Don't worry. Like, it was her that had the big issue.
Yeah.
That's the thing when you're a comedian. Like,
you haven't got any friends.
Haven't got any friends because you can't go and do anything.
I guess you just...
Everything happens on weekends.
You must have to just sort of be friends with lots of other comedians, right? That's why loads of comedians go out with each other, isn't it?
You date each other? I guess so. I guess so, because that is the only people you tend to see, because everything happens at weekends, Joel.
And or it's just in the evenings.
I mean, if you wanted to have your birthday in Brighton, I could come.
It's not a bad idea.
It's a nice place.
It's a lovely place.
I could pop off, do a gig, come back.
Great.
Say happy birthday.
We could all say, Mark, how was the gig?
Yeah. And that would be conversations, you know, for guaranteed conversation, just in case you're worried that, you know, it might all dry up with between your friends. I don't know if they get on the right with each other, do they?
Yeah, this will be a test.
Yeah. Shall we do that then?
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. I'll change all my plans for you.
Okay. Lovely.
Great.
And is it a big party?
I reckon it's going to be about a 30-person party.
Because you're...
30!
30!
Yeah.
Are the family coming or is it just a friends thing?
There's some family there to make up the numbers, for sure.
Were there? Okay.
Yeah.
Where's it being held?
It's a pub near me in their room upstairs. And
ooh, lovely.
There's ongoing negotiations about some karaoke.
Why is it being negotiated?
Well, you have to hire a machine. You know, there's all sorts of stuff.
It sounds like someone wanted it and someone didn't.
Oh, no, everyone wants it.
Really? Do you like karaoke?
It's fun, isn't it?
What's your go-to karaoke song? I've never in my life done karaoke.
You've never done karaoke?
Of course not. I can't sing. Why would I do karaoke?
Yeah, but the worst people in the world are the people that can sing at karaoke.
I hate
those guys. Don't you hate those guys? Have you ever
Yeah.
Yeah, when they get up and it's all like, they're like in a wedding band or whatever and they just smash Angels by Robbie Williams. That's not fun.
No.
We're here to watch people like me, desperately
but
bad,
trying to
sing.
But I bet you're not desperate.
But out of hell by Meatloaf, I am really bad.
No, I bet you're passable. Like, I just have nothing. Like, there's no... I'm tone deaf.
Have you ever had to sing on stage as like part of a panel show or...
Once I went... So, what happened?
What's the most outside of your comfort zone?
It was someone's birthday. Mm. And like to sort of, the idea was sort of, I think it was during an Edinburgh show. It was to embarrass them maybe. And someone I knew anyway, and it was to sing happy birthday. And then as I was saying it, I realized I'm the only one with a microphone. So I'm the only one everyone's really going to hear. And I can't sing to save my life. Oh, that was horrible.
I am in my very short-lived comedy career, I once really, really, really embarrassed
when
a friend
you were a professional
mine.
Stand-up comedian.
Exactly. Yeah, I really, really embarrassed a friend of mine who had recently gone to join the RAF.
Right.
And he'd been medically discharged after 2 weeks because of his colour blindness. And he, you know, it was a big thing. We'd done a great big send off for him. Anyway, so he was at a gig 2 weeks. It was like the gig that I ran 2 weeks later, and it was a really big, busy room, probably about 60 people there. And I did a big thing about how he just returned from active duty and got everyone in the room to stand up and applaud him, and then did the big reveal that he'd been in the RAF for a fortnight.
But was he quite upset about that joke?
Yeah, he was. Yeah, it's quite a cruel thing to do.
Is he coming to the party? I can't imagine you're still friends.
Yeah, he's coming. He's a paramedic now, so.
Oh, is he?
He's actually quite useful to have on nights out.
Yeah.
Just useful to have around all the time. I'd love
nice,
it if he lived
actually.
With me.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's good. I can't imagine a drunk paramedic's great, is it?
Better than just a drunk normal guy.
They want to show everyone that they know what they're doing, but their coordination's off and I don't know. Did you know paramedics? Oh, I might be lying now. I was just having this conversation with someone the other day that because when I dislocated my toe when I was fighting, they couldn't not in a controlled environment. Actually, it's quite topical. Yeah. Taekwondo's really really doing well this year.
Great.
Have you watched it?
I have been watching it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's exciting, isn't it?
It's really exciting.
So I dislocated my toe, and then the paramedic wasn't allowed to put it back in. You had to wait till you go back to hospital. But I think it might have even been one sort of your sort of pretend. I don't know what you call them. What's
St. John's ambulance?
Are they real ones?
I don't think a St. John's ambulance can pop a bone back in. They're just sort of there to give you some paracetamol, aren't they?
Can paramedics pop a bone back in?
Yeah.
Can they?
Yeah, they can do fucking CPR. Of course they can pop a bone back in.
All right, fair enough.
They can do it. They just do what needs to be done, right?
I know there's something that you had to go to hospital.
They're not. Their remit doesn't stop at your little toe.
That's funny. Yeah,
I haven't been trained for that. I've not been trained for this. They get called out to emergencies, but they won't fucking look at her foot.
She just passes out in the corner as she looks at it.
The bloke crashes the air ambulance.
Oh, Joe, everything else okay this week?
Yeah, great.
Yeah?
Yeah, really lovely. Good. I'm in a good mood today.
You look like you're in a good mood. I'm in a good mood too. I've had some nice gigs this weekend. It's been really fun. Yeah. Do you want to hear some feedback from online stuff?
Would love to.
I wonder what that was. It's from Doug Heimrich. Just listen to the first 361 jokes, 5 at a time, Patreon pod. If someone walking by me saw me laughing like an idiot for 10 seconds, it's because of Mark's Robin Hood reminisces.
Ooh.
Can you remember what that was?
I can't remember.
I haven't got a clue. Why were we talking about Robin Hood?
I don't know.
What could that possibly have been?
No idea.
No. You know what you can do, Joel? You can go to patreon.com/ jokes with Mark and find out. Let us know. Yeah. Tweet us at jokes with Mark across all social media. You got loads of. We're putting up the. I think it might even be the 16th episode of 361 jokes, 5 at a time. Yeah, great stuff. I don't know.
Yeah, probably, yeah.
I think I was going to say something, Joel, and I can't remember. But we've got such a good podcast this week. I know who it is, but I'll ask you like I always ask you, Joel. Who have we got on this week, Joel?
We've got one of my favourite comedians in the world.
Am I on it?
Oh, it's no.
I am on it.
Yeah, that's true.
Yay.
We've got another one of my favourite comedians in the world.
Ooh.
Mr. Carl Donnelly.
It's Carl. It is Mr. Carl Donnelly. And Mr. Carl Donnelly had only just got back from Australia, where he's been for months and months and months doing comedy. So we chat a bit about that. We chat about jokes. We have a great old chinwag. Great to have him back on the podcast. A return and now a friend of the podcast is Mr. Carl Donnelly.
Weirdly, this is probably a good starting point about jokes and things. A lot of my stuff I've realised over the years has been about how me getting into embarrassing situations and then talking about it from that perspective of I'm really embarrassed. Yeah, yeah. I genuinely think since having a kid, my sense of shame has gone out the window. Like, I'll walk down the street covered in shit. Like, I don't care. And I'm part of me is a bit not concerned, but like I did a Melbourne Comedy Festival show. I was one of the few people that that was lucky enough to do it who wasn't from Australia, and I did notice that it was a lot more observational than stories.
Oh wow! So is that
But then I suppose nothing's really happened. No, there's no stories from the last year. None, we're all just stuck in our houses. So it might have been that more than the fact that I just don't care anymore.
And you're someone that wouldn't want to pretend that you were embarrassed if you weren't.
No, I wouldn't. It has to be real shame.
So how did you find reaction-wise to the difference? So to story stuff and then to observational stuff, did you get a similar sort of response, or were you like, "Oh, I like this," or was it not as?
No, I say I've always done observations as well in the stories. Yeah. I always sneak obs into stories, but this time I let a lot of them stand on their own.
Right. Yeah.
You know, on like just an old, I did quite a bit about the pandemic.
So I was going to say that because I saw your Garda clip. And that was nearly all pandemic stuff,
and it was quite short. That was probably that was the best gala set I've done. I've done a few of them, and it was the most punchy. They felt like actual jokes. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, more than ever.
It's topical, I guess.
Anytime it was topical, but anytime I've done one of them galas, I've done three in Australia, one in New Zealand, and basically for anyone who doesn't know what it is, it's basically you do this big theatre show pre-festival that goes out on television, and you have to do like between 3 and 4 minutes, which is such an unnatural length of time for somebody who does long sort of form
stuff.
That's
actually my favourite amount of time, 3 minutes.
it's where the joke writers
really won't get bored of me. 5 minutes, could get a little bit bored of the same thing. But 3 minutes. Daryl Martin did this online show throughout the pandemic. And he basically did, I sent him some videos of like 2 or 3 jokes, and he would just play them every so often through the show. And then on Saturday, you dying?
I went down the wall.
I love that when you talk. About, you
I felt it.
Oh, no.
God. Sorry. Start that again. You were doing a Daryl Martin online show.
Yeah, yeah. And he wanted to sort of recreate it in a live environment. So I did it on Saturday. And I just, every so often, I went on and did 3 minutes and then went off again. And then went on and did another 3 minutes. And it was amazing. Yeah. It was perfect. I really enjoyed it, yeah.
It's so much easier. Like that's
what the Edinburgh show should be. Just 3 minutes. You're in, you're out. They get the gist. Yeah.
It's perfect though. I mean, like, I genuinely have always struggled with those short sets. Mm. Like since the early door, you know, when you're a 5 minute open spot, it still feels like a relatively long time.
But you were a bit different then anyway, weren't you? Back when you were doing that stuff, were you? You were sort of.
I found it easier stepping up. Like, I didn't find going from 5 minutes to 10 minutes hard, or 10 minutes to 20 minutes and longer and stuff. And getting to my first hour wasn't particularly tricky. I've always felt like it. I found it easier to go long. Yeah. But so them short sets are like killers. Mm. I mean, like the last couple of times I've done them, I've been poring over it for days trying to work out a way of doing a set that's 4 minutes long. This was the first time ever I was like, I'd written enough like short, jokey observations.
Welcome to the club, mate.
That I was like, I'll just pick that one, that one, that one, and that one, and that one, and that's about 4 minutes. I was like, this is perfect. Yeah.
And it was really good because it's all on topic as well. I was going to say, you had a line about piles. Was that line, did you have that line before and then worked it into this happening during COVID? You're so truthful in everything you do, aren't you? You really...
I try and be, like, I mean, I try and be in the sense of everything. I try not to make something sound current if it ain't current. Do you know what I mean? Like, so everything's true. Everything I say is based on a thing that's happened to me, unless it's an observation and it's just something you've seen. But I don't like doing that thing of, like, you know, I recently had I recently went through a breakup, and I'm talking about my divorce from 2013. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. I even if I'm talking about something, I always say when it was, just to give them some.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
I don't know why. I feel too guilty. So I'll say something happened 10 years ago or something.
Yeah. Do you think that makes a difference in how it's received?
Absolutely not. No. it's all my own. It's me judging myself more than worrying about
them.
Yeah,
they don't care, do they? So
they couldn't give a shit. They don't believe her. They think everything's a lie anyway. That's the thing with audiences.
That's where you, I guess, have more trouble, because you have to convince them. And if anything actually happens to you that is a bit mad, like really mad, that must be so hard to actually get them to believe that you haven't just made it up.
I've got a story that I've tried on stage about 3 times. I'm pretty sure I didn't mention it last time I was on this, but I've tried to tell it and it does not work, because it just sounds like nonsense. And and as well, it's a drug story,
right?
So I always feel gross saying it. But it's about taking acid at the Edinburgh Fringe once.
Why do you feel gross saying it? Because
drug story.
Because it's done a lot, or because it's just the topic of it's about you taking drugs, so it's quite.
I think it's so easy for a drug story to sound like you're going, like, yeah, I take drugs. When I don't, I haven't taken drugs in years now. My dad, for Christ's sake. But like, you know, just saying it feels like it's quite an exclusive thing to talk about, because even though we've got a big drug culture in this country, there are generations of people that never touched anything stronger than maybe. You know, they might have had a pill back in the 90s
or something. People like my mum's generation, they always say, oh, that person, I think they do drugs. Like it's so general of they do drugs.
They've got no idea about drugs. And especially, and so when you start talking about hallucinogens or something, like, it's got to be in a big context. Like, I did an Edinburgh show where I talked about me going off and drinking ayahuasca tea, which is like a hallucinogenic experience.
Right.
And that was like, that show took a shed load of work to make palatable for people, because 99% of the audience at every single show will have no idea. Not even they won't have done it, but most of them would have never even heard of that drug.
Yeah, well, I haven't.
Exactly. So, like, you know, you're starting from a point of, I'm going to tell you an hour-long story about something you've got no interest in. So strap in, everyone.
So do you think...
The story just quickly was about me and some mates taking acid at the Edinburgh Fringe, and then going back to my apartment flat, and a neighbour must have heard some commotion and came to bang on my door and give me an absolute shellacking. And he was dressed as a pirate, but not ironically. Like, I'd been warned about him. I'd been told there was a guy who had a disability, lived downstairs, don't annoy him, he's got a real chip on his shoulder.
So, and it wasn't a manager. Parrot.
He basically had like one sort of peg leg.
What, a real peg leg?
And he had a stick, and he had like a stick. But no one had warned me, but the guy I lived next door to was this crazy Scott who I'd got on with early doors in the festival. So he just said to me, he goes, heads up, if you end up having any sort of people back, the guy downstairs is a nutcase, mate. He's just like, he's got such anger issues, and he's got a disability. And I didn't take it on board. And then, this guy came to look at the door. I was up to my eyeballs on acid. And I said to my two mates, just be quiet. Just stay in here. I'll go and do the talking. I'm going to pull myself together to have this conversation. And I opened the front door, and there was a pirate in front of me. And I just started laughing. So literally, I'm on acid, and now I'm talking to a pirate. And then he was shouting at me, and I'm laughing. And then he went, do you think this is funny? And I was like, fucking mate, I'm on acid and you're a pirate. So, yeah. And we had just a bit of a ding-dong, and he left. And then, like, but I've tried to tell that story in a way, and there's more to it, but in a way that sounds like, to try and explain to people, they were genuinely, because when I say pirate, he was dressed all in black. And when I say that, he had like a sort of one of them flowing black shirts. He had a black bandana on tight, and he had like a long black beard, and he had a cane with like a silver top, and he had one leg. So it was a pirate in front of him.
Was he trying to be a pirate?
I think that was his look. Yeah. That was his get up.
So did you, was it, because I mean, I've, as in the words of my mum, I've never done drugs. But when that's happening on acid, do you think that's not real?
But I didn't know. Part of me thought it wasn't.
Because that's what I was thinking while you were telling it. I was trying to ask myself whether you thought it was real and it wasn't, or...
I think, but on acid, you think you're in that position where you think everything's real, but it probably isn't as well. Yeah. So you have to deal with everything as it happens as if it's real, because you think, well, it could be real. Yeah. But then afterwards, you'll work out if it's real or not. And like, it was, you know, I just remember going back into the front room and my two mates, so they were all quiet, they were hiding under the sofa as well. I don't know what they thought was going to happen. And I just had to explain to them, I mean, there was a fucking pirate at the door. And we all just rolled around laughing for a while. But, like, it's one of them stories that would need a lot of work to be a good stand-up story. Yeah. But just people, I just don't think people believe that the guy was a pirate, which is understandable.
Yeah. But it's a bit like dreams, isn't it? It's a bit like doing jokes about a dream you had where it could just be so easily made up.
Yeah.
Because I had a really weird thing in a dream that was really funny. But I have tried it on stage and it just sounds like you're making it up. And I don't know if I'll tell you briefly what it was. It's really, really weird. So hang on, I just got to get it right. So in the dream, I was like a seagull, I think, right? Yeah. And there was this fox. And then so I was worried about getting eaten. And then I had the idea to put a fox mask on. To deceive it, and I did that.
Good plan.
And then the fox bummed me.
So it didn't work out. The plan that very much backfired.
And then I woke up with a hard on.
Oh man, that's when you know, that's bad when you bring something back to the real world from the dream world.
but I would like to think that I would have anyway, because that's just what happens.
That is, yeah. But then, you had a good chance of having one.
You start questioning yourself, is that what I'm into? But I tried to relay that and it never worked on stage. I felt it's just a bit too weird. Yeah.
I would actually say that's quite a good analogy in why I'm always dubious about drug stories, even though, because annoyingly, I've got loads of them because I went through a druggy phase in my youth. Yeah. And then I also... in my early 30s, after a bloody divorce, went through this weird hippie hallucinogenic journey for a couple of years. So I've got two periods of my life where I've got loads of stories. And I've ended up telling, I've probably told 5 drug stories on stage in my entire career. But I've got loads. But it's because I'm so...
And did those 5 work?
Dubious, but I think they're like dreams. I think actually most people don't want to hear them. I think... Yeah. You know, no matter how interesting you think it is, 9 times out of 10, they're not. So most of mine, I just leave on the cutting room floor because I'm like, A, I feel weird saying it, and B, I don't think people want to listen.
So is this the first show you wrote specifically for Australia? Because, I mean, realistically, would you be able to do any of the stuff from that show again? Or is that just gone now?
There'd be bits, yeah. Because what it was, I would say 40 minutes of the show was obs and things from the last year about the pandemic and about, you know, things that were happening and things I've done during lockdowns and stuff. And there was a 20-minute story at the end of the show, because obviously I mentioned that we had a baby during lockdown. Mm. And then sort of the last 20 minutes of the show was me talking about how we did IVF to create a baby. And that was something that I'd worked up a little bit last summer when gigs opened. So I managed to go out and get that story. You know, it wasn't a 20-minute story then. It was, you know, by the end of the summer, it was probably a 10-minute story that I was happy to do in a club 20. Yeah. It was that, I got it punchy enough that I was like, right, this is a proper funny story. But for an hour show, I managed to sort of get it to about 20 minutes and really get into some more details.
Right.
And that, I think... that will probably stay and become part of a actual proper show.
Because you can frame that within COVID, because that's when you had the baby. But would it work?
But it's also an interesting topic, I think, IVF.
Yeah,
I've never heard anyone talk about IVF.
So would you then be able to take the COVID out of the story and still write?
Yeah, because we did IVF the end of the year before and the baby was born mid last year. So
Yeah, you know, I don't think I've ever heard anyone do anything IVF related.
Weirdly, I mentioned Sarah Barron. She saw me do a very early version. Like the first time I ever talked about it on stage was like a 5-minute bit. Mm. And afterwards, she said to me, I was the first person she'd ever seen, because she's talking about it on stage now herself.
Oh, right.
But because she was like, it's great. I think she was like, I'm really surprised no one's ever talked about it.
Oh, that.
Because it is, I mean, it's, you know, it's quite common. Yeah. But I do think there's an element of shame to it.
Do you think still? Well, you're changing that, mate, by talking about it. You're doing your bit.
And also, I don't have any shame anymore.
No, which we've discovered.
So it doesn't matter. But no, but I think I don't have shame about it, or don't have any issue with talking about it, because I genuinely, even when we were doing it, I didn't think we would, it didn't feel like a stressful thing. It felt like, it was like quite a natural progression. We got offered a round on the NHS because we'd been trying. You basically, if you're trying for over a year, right. We weren't trying, like, you know, we didn't have a app that was like, right, you're ovulating now, go and do it. We just left things to chance and like, let's just see if it happens. Yeah. Nothing happened, and then we went to get fertility tests just to check there was no problems. And then when we went to the doctors about them, she was like, there's no actual medical issue, it's probably just age, you know, we were both knocking on 40. Right. And then the doctor said, do you know you can get a free round of IVF on the NHS if we could do that if you want. And then we genuinely were like, oh, we didn't know that. So we just went into it totally blindly ignorant and optimistic that, like, oh, let's just give it a go, see what happens, and if it doesn't work, we'll go back to the other way. And then we end up just doing IVF totally because a doctor mentioned it. So there was none of that. I think some people would probably be a bit reticent to talk about it because if they had a very stressful experience with it, and it was one of them ones where they'd tried for years to have a baby, it didn't work, and then they did 3 failed rounds of IVF and all that. And you know, it might have been a 5-year chunk of their life. Yeah. Whereas ours was incredibly pain and stress-free. Yeah.
Well, it's like you just talking about it then, because I don't know anything about that you could get. That's what's a great thing about a story that is that it's interesting at the bottom level. It's interesting.
Yeah.
And then if you can add to that on top, that's sort of half the battle, isn't it? Being something people want to listen to. Did you find any of it didn't work, or you couldn't? Did anyone who had IVF ever comment?
Yeah, a few people actually. I've had a few people come up after shows and say it's really interesting. It's like they'd mentioned that I'm talking about it and say they really liked hearing about it, and they'd gone through it, and then they just tell me their stories. It's quite a nice, you feel like some sort like war survivor or something.
Because in one of my shows, I had, and literally, you know, the way my shows are, like literally 1 or 2 jokes about having Crohn's. And afterwards, I get people come up to me who've got Crohn's and go, have you really got Crohn's? Like really kind of aggressive at me. I don't know whether that's because I'm a jokey kind of guy, that none of it seems real. So I don't know whether they just thought I'd fought some wordplay and gone.
No, I wouldn't say. I'd say it's just because you're a comedian. They genuinely think we make it all
up. Yeah, maybe. But because you're more believable in how you tell your story, they obviously believed you.
They do, but I've been asked if that's true.
Oh, really?
Like after Edinburgh shows, where I've done, like, you know, most of my Edinburgh shows, I'd say, like, out of the, what if I am of a heavy money, I did 12 before the world ended. Yeah. I would say 9 of them were an hour of just pissing around and having a laugh and doing some silly stories and fun observations. Yeah. I've done 3 that were probably personal, right, here's a bit of me. And they were like, you know, they were good to do, but they can be a bit more tricky, you know. But I did one, there was one I got nominated for, which was quite personal. My marriage has failed.
Right.
The year after that, I think, was the most personal show I did. That was all about, you know, it talked about antidepressants and therapy and all sorts of quite deep, dark stuff. And recovery of, like, going through something as big as a marriage ending and, you know, drink, drugs, everything. I got quite deep into the weeds of my life. And I remember pouring my heart out for an hour and still having to make it funny. And people coming up afterwards and going, is that all true? It's like, mate, fucking, do you think I would make all that up?
Would I put myself through? Yeah, yeah. Wow.
Is that true, all that shit you're saying? Nah, I just made it up, you idiot. So I do think people, that you'd always get people that are just cynical.
Married, yeah. So yeah, so much detail there. Mad, isn't it? Did you find when doing stuff in Australia that, like, did any of the stuff that you went over with not work because it was Australia?
Yeah, I mean, I do think some of the bleaker stuff about the pandemic didn't fly. I had to take the edge off a lot, and I think that's because, especially Melbourne, they're quite sensitive. Melbourne audiences, right. You don't want to hit. You don't want to mention the deaths.
Really?
You
know, okay.
I had bits in that I was doing here, like say last summer. Like I'd sort of like just like quite, you know, funny little observations, but then would mention the. You know, oh, I tell you, here's a good example. I've got a bit that ended up in the show, and it's about when they threatened to deploy the army last summer.
Oh, yeah,
because of mass gatherings, they were like, you know, everyone was having like illicit barbecues rather than sticking to the rule of six. And there was a press conference, and they said the army have been deployed, or the army were on call to be deployed to deal with the mass gathering problem. And I sort of said that, and I said, like, you know, it's the only time in my life that I've ever felt sympathy for the army, because, you know, you don't sign up for that, do you? Like, you sign up for, like, to either, you know, you think you're going to protect your country, and I said, or you messed up school. They're the only two reasons you go into the army. And then I just acted out this thing of, like, imagine signing up thinking you'd be touring the world, and you end up in an Aldershot barracks with your sergeant coming in and going, right, guys, orders are in for today. We've got an 8-year-old's birthday party in Penge with 14 people. And that routine. But then when I did it here, I had this sort of add-on, which was I sort of acted out a trigger-happy guy bursting into a barbecue. And I said, like, you know, and basically and killing a bunch of people from a family. And I talked about, like, you know, imagine ending up in 25 years of therapy with PTSD because you killed a grandmother at a barbecue and all this. And it was just like a sort of an add-on that was quite dark, yeah. But quite, it was, the point was trying to put that sort of what you think soldiers do into, yeah, using them against social gatherings. When I did it on Australia, like, I mean, like, literally the first time I ever said it, I think I said the line, imagine just killing a grandmother. Like, and I could just feel people go, like, all right, mate, calm down. You know, there was just a sense of, you know, you didn't need to go there. The rest of the joke was good enough.
Yeah.
So I just had to, I feel like whenever I do a bit that's got a little bit of, oh, that's a bit gross, actually, or a bit horrible. And it's not, that's not the purpose of it. It's just, if you're talking about soldiers bursting into a barbecue, you can't help sometimes point out where it could end. I just find in Australia you've got to just soften the edges for them because they're a little bit, you know, not out. If you go to Queensland, you could talk about anything, mate, they ain't gonna care. Sydney, they're feral, man. They're good fun. But like Melbourne are very cultured festival audiences who will love you, and they'll go with every sort of part of the show and every wave and theme and all that. But you've got to just slightly go easy on them because they're not cut out for anything too dark.
Yeah. Did you change the names of the towns? Because Penge, surely they don't know where Penge is.
I think I just didn't say a town name.
Oh, okay.
I think I said we've got an 8-year-old's birthday party with like 14 people.
Would it have worked if you gave an example of a Australian town to make it relatable?
Yeah, I reckon it would have, but then I think, you know, again, in my head, I'd be like, well, they're not doing it here, are they?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Like, I'd feel sort of inauthentic to myself.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I just dropped the... I realised it didn't need to have a town name as a joke to work. The joke was you're bursting into a birthday party.
And does a barbecue have different, like, meaning for them? Like, did you say barbecue?
Yeah, but hang on, I said... An 8-year-old's birthday party is what I said.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, it was... but there's... Yeah, that, I mean, that's most of the things with, like, differences between here and there tend to be little things like that. You just have to shave a bit. You know, most of it translates really well both ways.
Like, but what's stopped me is just the... I just... The fear... It's the classic boring thing to say, but the spiders and all that shit,
right?
And but people tell me Melbourne, it's not that bad.
You never see a spider in. I don't think I've ever seen anything other than a house spider in Melbourne in all the years I've been going.
Is it called a house spider because that's how big it is?
So why it's just bought the place next door. It's no, you don't. Yeah, it's Melbourne. It's a city. You don't see spiders.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah. I might do that, but they ain't getting me to go to Snow Outback.
When I was a couple of years ago in Melbourne, probably like
I saw a video of you once or something when you were in a tent in the middle of nowhere and this huge thing on your tent or something, and that.
Oh, was that the one in the window?
It might have been. I can't remember. But
this is it. Basically, just after Melbourne Festival 2018, I went and stayed in a cabin in the woods.
Yeah, you are a lunatic. Right? I can't.
But it was basically my wife was going to Queensland. She was going to be gone for like a week.
Yeah.
And I just didn't want to. I was like, yeah, my options were stay at my in-laws on my own or go and do something. Mm. Fun, exciting on my own. And a friend of mine, just he knew I had a week off, and I said so I might go somewhere on my own, exciting. And he went, like, his family, like his like father-in-law had died and left this cabin in the woods. It's about an hour and a half north of Melbourne in the bush.
That's just got horror film written all over it, mate.
Oh mate, when I got there, like, he just went, take the keys, man, go up to the cabin. I was like, fucking yes please. Got there, no, there's no phone reception, there's no
so
phone,
you get
like,
bitten, you're done,
nothing. Dead, mate. Oh, dead in the woods. But I went in there and I walked in, beautiful place, you know, had a little sort of stove fire thing, and it was so remote. It took me about 2 hours to just feel like I'm off the grid now.
Yeah.
And then I went to the toilet. The first time I went to the toilet there, I saw what I thought was a dead huntsman behind the toilet roll holder. And it was dead. I mean, it was dead. This thing was all shriveled up and gross, and like, but when it was alive, it would have been big, right? And I was like, fuck, I'm glad that's dead. And anyway, I spent 4 days in this cabin on my own in the woods.
Did you go out or just stayed in the cabin?
I'd go out for wanders around, and you know, there was a town about sort of 20-minute walk, and I'd walk up the hill to the town and get breakfast in the morning and stuff. But otherwise, I just sat around reading and that, and it felt really, it was lovely. But on the day I was leaving, I walked out, locked up, and I looked, and inside the window was the fucking biggest huntsman I've ever seen. Like, I'm talking like, huntsmen's are like big tarantulas.
Yeah.
And it was just inside the window. It was in with me the whole time. Oh my God.
It was really, it was in there the whole time you were in there.
It must have been in there. I was in there the whole time with it. Like, I would have killed myself if I'd saw it inside. And I'm not even scared of spiders. I've got no fear of spiders at all.
Oh my.
But I would have killed myself. Because they're that big that they are. They're not dangerous. They'll bite you and you'll get a bit of a...
Oh, really? Not dangerous?
You'll be a bit angry. But they're not poisonous or anything. But, you know,
freaky,
that thing of just...
That big?
They're so scary looking.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, my God.
This bit I did in Australia that didn't... I couldn't, to be honest, I never really put enough work into it. I think there's something funny in it, but it's about, because we stayed with my in-laws for the whole time we were in Melbourne, and you know, they've, you know, Australian houses, even quite meager houses, are bigger than here because there's just way more room everywhere. So their house isn't a tiny little thing. You're not on top of everyone, but I was still living with my in-laws for best part of 5 months. And I tried to do a bit about what it's like to, when you live with old people, not just like spend a few days at old people's houses, like parents and stuff, but living with old people, and you just realise they are fucking mental. Like my father-in-law just does not stop talking. Every time you're in a room with him, he is talking. Like, he enters rooms talking. And I tried to do this bit about how I was in the kitchen cooking, and he just walked into the kitchen mid-story. And I was literally making food, thinking, who the fuck got the first half of that story, mate? Like, how does this work? And I tried to sort of do a thing like, he must just walk around the house like a basking shark with his mouth open, just emitting noise. And everyone just catches it, whichever room they're in. And I think there's something funny in it. But I just threw it out on stage.
Yeah, yeah.
And couldn't really work out what I was trying to, where I'm going with it. It can't just be that. Do you know what I mean? It needs to be.
Yeah, it feels like that you could find some logic in there to why he does it.
Yeah. I suppose it is. Yeah, there's got to be a reason. Why do old people just talk incessantly?
Like,
it's, and because it sounds quite mean, but it's not. It's genuine. It's an observation about just like, because they're the nicest people on earth. My in-laws, genuinely, yeah. Like, I couldn't ask for better in-laws. But
sometimes old people don't. They're not very self-aware. They become less self-aware because I've been listening to a story that anyone with self-awareness would know I have no interest at all in what's happening, and they're talking to me and like.
But they don't care either. They don't care if you're into it. This is the thing I remember, actually, because like that it's irrelevant if you're listening or caring. It's just the fact that you're there. They almost just want, you know, it's almost like they don't care if you're a human. They just want a sort of thing to say it at. Like, yes, I remember there was times when I'd be, you know, I'd be changing a nappy. I'd have a crying baby. I've got other things going. I'm literally juggling about five plates. My father-in-law would just walk in to tell me about something he just listened to on the radio. And like, I'm like, it's not that I'm not listening. It's that I physically cannot listen. Yeah. Like, I've not got the capability to listen at this point. So I would just be doing stuff. I'm trying to calm my baby down. At no point do I even show any sign that I'm listening to what he's saying. And he's just there at the doorway just going, yeah. So there he was. Then they were talking about the sort of current tree situation in the Amazon. And yeah, I was just like, what is going on? Like, who speaks with that little care about if you're the other person's listening or
it's
not?
It's basically Julian Dean doing his Zoom gig, isn't it? He just keeps talking. He don't care.
Yeah.
You've just muted. He doesn't know.
It is like, yeah, there's something about them. They're like the radio.
That's my first thought. Was a radio. Like a late night radio person that isn't, that no one is listening at 3 a.m. and they just keep talking.
That's really funny. Late night radio host. But there was, yeah, that was.
Because also, people tune into the radio halfway through what's being said, don't they? But no one starts at the beginning of a radio show. It's not like a podcast where you start at the beginning. So there is something in that. I think.
I'm just going to have a look and see if there was any other, what other bits in my show that were quite tricky to work out.
Oh, I need to fill with some podcast expertise again. So I'm not very good at that. So I could do with your father-in-law here right now, just to start talking, just to fill the dead air.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
There was a bit I couldn't take over to Melbourne in my show, which was about do you know what it was actually? It was about the royal family. It was, and it sort of was about the Prince Andrew stuff, but it was off the back of a routine about conspiracy theorists and, you know, that whole sort of that everyone's spending too much time at home, so naturally the spike in conspiracy theories is being quite bad.
Yeah.
And I did a thing about how every conspiracy theorist seems to be totally obsessed with paedophiles at the minute. Like, but they basically think every celebrity is a paedophile who's like transporting kids in tunnels. And have you heard about that? It's like it's basically part of that QAnon conspiracy. Right. They think there's like this global satanic, like pedo cabal that are running everything. And it's honestly crazy when you read into it. But I did a thing about sort of the rise of that sort of thinking. And the point I was saying was, why is it they're always obsessed with these fake people that aren't paedophiles? It's like, you know, there's no evidence that they're paedophiles when they're not, you don't see protests up in arms about someone like Prince Andrew, who's wanted by the FBI for questioning about sex with a minor. And I did this bit, and then I talked about how, it was sort of about how the royal family, how they managed to navigate that situation and not get in any way questioned about their validity. And then I brought it back around to the fact that obviously that was going to happen, because like basically we let the royal family exist because of tourism. That's the only reason. And it goes on to that. And basically then I go through a list of things that tourists spend their money on that prove that the royal family aren't important. They'd spend it on any old shit regardless. Yeah. And then, so like there was this whole routine that was funnier than I've made any of it sound there. But one bit was about Madame Tussauds, right, which was still a big tourist site. Mm. And I talk about the fact that Madame Tussauds still exists undermines the fact that, you know, when people say, well, you know, the royal family bringing a lot of money, I say, yeah, but so does Madame Tussauds. It doesn't mean it's a valid thing in the modern age. And I talk about how, like, people coming over all the way to London to go to Madame Tussauds and getting all their photos and taking it home and putting it up on their wall, thinking their friends will believe that they met these people. And the punchline is somebody looking at a wall going, oh, mate, I didn't know you were friends with Gandhi. Like that.
That's great.
But sort of that whole routine.
That's a one-liner, mate.
Yeah, it's quite funny, isn't it? But like that whole routine didn't make it to Oz. Even though I think a lot of them would have heard of Madame Tussauds, it was like, it was all too British. Madame Tussauds, the royal family.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, all criticizing the royal family, why was that? It doesn't matter to Australians, even though they're technically still the royal family of Australia. Mm. No one cares. They don't.
You know,
there's not a single person of a generation below about 70 over there that would even give the Queen a second thought.
So, did you know that before you went over, or did you give it a little try just to see?
Oh, I gave it five or six rollouts in the old. I would say, yeah, I did a few like previews and work in progress, like, and I was just like, I thought I'm gonna try and make this work because I think it's really funny.
Yeah.
And then naturally, after a handful of times, I was like, what am I doing? I'm trying to fit this in. Mm. Whereas just cut it and just accept it's not made up. It's, you know, it shouldn't have got on the plane.
That Gandhi line's great. So will you do that again over here now? As a bit,
I don't know if I will. I wasn't. Do you know when you sometimes drop a bit because it's not happening, like, and you think I'll go back to it at some point, and then actually when you look back at it, you're like, I don't think I'm as fond of that as I thought I was.
Yeah,
you know, because it is like the point of the whole routine ultimately is we need to bring down the royal family, but
that could divide an audience as well.
It could. I think most gigs now, though, if you're not doing it, I'm not saying let's, you know, hang them off Tower Bridge, you know what I mean? Yeah. I'm just saying they're probably a bit outdated in the modern age. And they've got a pedo in them. But, you know. I feel now looking at it. And if you said to me, would you do that this weekend? I'd be like, I don't think I care enough about it at the minute to bother talking about it. Do you know what I mean? It's done, isn't it? That's all done.
Yeah.
We let them get away with it. It's fine. Let's move on to the next thing.
Carl Donnelly! Hashtag Awooga to Carl Donnelly. There we go. Any feedback from the episode at Jokes with Mark across all social media. Let us know what you think. Any ideas, pop it in. We'll read them out next week. We'll have a chat about your comments.
If you're enjoying something, you know, like good old friend of the show Doug was, tweet about it. Tweet us to tell us you've enjoyed it. Tell us you're listening to a bit that neither me or Mark can remember.
But that's quite nice. I'm looking forward to finding out what that bit was.
Yeah, me too.
Robin Hood actually said, I'm not very good at making arrows. Mm-hmm. He then showed me his and I was like, good point, well made. There you go. That wasn't what we had to talk about in that one, but I thought I'd chuck in a little Robin Hood joke, especially for you guys. Thank you very much. Let us know what you think. Head over to patreon.com/jokeswithmark for bonus Carl Donnelly episode and for another 361 jokes, five at a time. Loads of content over there now. Go check it all out. And if you're enjoying the podcast, why don't you let us know by heading over to Apple Podcasts and giving us a 5-star review. The more of those we get, the more listeners we get, the bigger the podcast gets, the better guests we can get. So what more can you want? Oh, that's another thing, Joe. I'm about to start recording a new batch of podcasts. So if any of the listeners have anyone particular they would like us to have on, tweet us at Jokes with Mark, let us know, and I'll see what I can do.
Smashing.
All right, Joe. Anything more from you?
Nothing more from me, Mark. Anything more from you, Mark?
Nothing more from me, Joe. Hashtag Uber, everybody.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.